Strangers and Aliens, Episode 58. Interview with Aaron and Alan Rainey, authors of The Flight of the Angels. This episode of Strangers and Aliens is brought to you by Audible.com. For the listeners of Strangers and Aliens, Audible is offering a free audiobook download when you sign up for their free 30-day trial. Just go to audibletrial.com/strangers. You can cancel at any time. The book is yours to keep, and we thank you for your support.
Welcome to the Strangers and Aliens podcast.
Strangers. To boldly say what needs to be said.
Would you be a stranger or an alien? Or would you be a strange alien?
The truth is out there. I am your father's best friend, Plumber. Superman.
Wonder Woman.
Heroes. Villains. Captain Picard versus Captain Kirk.
Do you think that there's room in sci-fi for God? The very first thing that God did was that he created something, so we have a creative God.
This is Strangers and Aliens Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Strangers and Aliens podcast. I'm Ben Avery, one of the three regular hosts of Strangers and Aliens. There are three of us here to talk today, but I'm the only one of the regular hosts who are actually here. I'm joined by Alan and Aaron Rainey. They are the authors of the book Flight of the Angels, a book that I finally finished reading. I don't know how long ago it got sent to me, but I did finally finish it, and I wanted to get these guys on to talk with them. They are here with me now, so Alan and Aaron, if you could please just say hello and maybe give a brief introduction of who you are and what you do and how you're related.
Okay, well, hi everybody. My name is Alan Rainey. I am the old guy. And so I am related to Aaron in the sense that I am his father. And what we do is we're just part of this whole growing sci-fi Christian kind of science fiction Christian novel writers community that seems to be springing up out of nowhere lately.
Yeah, Aaron Rainey, I'm his son.
An editor.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about what you do in your day job, because I'm assuming that the writing of science fiction Christian novels is not your primary source of income. And I think I read somewhere that one of you is was a teacher or something like that. Is that?
Yep, that's me. That's Aaron, the son. Okay. I'm currently teaching at a community college in northern Minnesota, Hibbings, the town. I've been teaching there about 4 years. Primarily, I teach composition writing courses. And so, I take up kind of the editing hat in our authoring relationship. I tend to be very nitpicky about commas and those sorts of things.
He knows where all the commas go, which gives him a definite leg up on me. He's tried to teach me that, and I just crank it out, and then he fixes it, and it causes a lot of happy times between us. Yeah. And as far as me, Alan, I actually am a director of training and personnel for a little restaurant chain up here with 10 restaurants. So I get to work with about 600 people, which means I get to do a decent amount of motivational speaking and things like that, which I find very, very enjoyable. And also I'm an ordained minister as well. So that means I get to do some guest speaking shots and things like that as well. So all of that, those are our day jobs. And no, we have not made $1 million on Flight of Angels yet.
I do notice you mentioned that part, so that's good. That's forward thinking right there. Okay, so how then does a motivational speaker, minister, and his professor or teacher son come to write a science fiction novel, a Christian science fiction novel at that? What happened that caused you guys to just say, you know what, we should write a book? And not only just we should write a book, but we should write it together.
Well, I think the story begins with me. I was about, actually, this project has been in the works for about a decade. We've only been writing it seriously for about 4 years, so we write about as fast as some hosts of other sci-fi Christian podcast read. And so we
who shall remain nameless.
Yes, who shall remain nameless.
But who also is from Minnesota.
And... Yes, exactly. So we've been writing on it seriously for about 4 years, but about 10 years ago, growing up a Christian, but also growing up an uber nerd in high school, and as a young parent, I was just looking at a lot of sci-fi that I liked and just saying that, you know, back 10 years ago, there wasn't a whole lot of science fiction written from a Christian worldview or a Christian point of view. There was, of course, the space trilogy, and you guys know all that. But I wanted to write something that I would enjoy, and I kind of started getting these ideas, and I started putting them down on paper, and then, you know, Aaron kind of picked up partway through it.
Yeah, I was. I remember the first time I heard about this particular universe, I was probably a junior, senior in high school, and my dad came out of the bedroom. He had this handwritten stuff on a notebook, and he wanted to read what he'd written, and this never happened. I mean, I knew he'd written stuff before, but he'd never done anything like this, and he just read about a page or so passage that ended up being the climax of the book we have now. And I remember him reading it, and I got a sense of the atmosphere. It was about kind of these machines and Christians being hunted down and killed, and kind of it was dark and it was just atmospheric. And I really got a sense of the universe, a really good feel for it right at that moment. And I thought, oh, this is cool. And then it just kind of sat there for about the next 6 years or so.
Yeah, it did pretty much just sit there. And while Aaron was off at college, I started to pick it up again and started to write again. And that's when I realized that having a day job, I just was not able to put in as much time into writing the novel as I would have liked to. That, and plus the fact that he was getting all kinds of training, and quite honestly, I've always felt had a little bit better knack for it and a bit of a better natural feel. And so at one point I called him up when he was at college and said, hey, you know all about this book I'm writing. It wasn't even called Flight of the Angels yet, but you know this book I'm writing. Would you like to come on board as a co-author?
Yeah, and I would say generally our strengths are, is my dad is really good at envisioning scenes and characters and dialogue and moments. And my strength, I think, tends to be more on the structural side of things. I really like, planning out a plot and mapping it out and figuring out how to be as efficient as possible while, you know, jumping back and forth and making sure everything aligns properly, you know, with the timing of everything. So what I eventually did is took a handful of these scenes he had written and started to put them together into an outline. And from that point, about the only way we could move forward from that is pretty much, you know, I'm an instructor now of English. I basically gave assignments out. You know, I would assign myself this chapter, I would assign him, you know, chapter 17, and then we would basically just email back and forth, track changes, you know, leave comments, and just talk it out.
And he would, I remember when he first put the outline together, it's like, oh, we need an outline? You mean the story has to make sense? And so after that, it started to move forward at a much more rapid pace.
Yeah. And what I was going to say is not that every writer needs to or should work from an outline as detailed as ours is. In fact, I think there can be a lot of joy in writing and discovering the story as you go. And there was a little of that in our process, but I think for co-authors, so you're not wasting time writing thousands and thousands and thousands of words that aren't going to eventually be used, I think for us it was very important to have a very particular detailed direction.
So how much did the outline change things for you then, as far as what you were already on track, some going in some direction? How much did the outline change that direction, or did it just kind of solidify things?
I think it more or less solidified things, but to really break it down, I had a beginning. I had like two or at most three critical scenes in the middle. And you can usually find those because they're the longer chapters. And it's not that I wrote all those chapters myself. Aaron wrote, you know, at least half of them. But the point is that I had those ideas as these are the mileposts that we want to hit on this story. And then, and of course, there was the ending that was there from the very beginning, which I guess is a great way to start, as Julie Andrews would say. But or the opposite of that.
Yeah.
But at any rate, what changed with the outline is that all of a sudden there had to be a motivation to get from this point to the next thing. And if the timeline didn't exactly make sense and the story didn't move along in between scenes, that's what the outline really, really helped with. And that's where, like Aaron already said, the assignments came out. It's like, we need a chapter where Nikki and Derek talk again. They meet somewhere. Okay, let's write that.
Well, let's quickly talk about Flight of the Angels itself then, and just what the book is about. It's a science fiction story. It takes place in the future. And if you could just kind of, you know, briefly let our listeners know, you know, if they get this book, what are they getting into?
Yeah, you know, it starts, like you said, it's a future, futuristic setting, and I think it helps to just understand the setting first of all. It's a place where religion in general and Christianity in particular have pretty much been outlawed, I should say, at certain points, and at the very least is frowned upon most of the time, because there have been some extremists that have, you know, done some acts of terrorism, and basically it's seen as, you know, quaint and old-fashioned at best, but outright dangerous at worst, and so it's been outlawed. And so the book picks up with this these fugitives that are on the run from their own government, led by this ex-Navy captain, Dex DeFalco, and his squadron, and these fighters, and they're basically trying to protect this colony of fugitives. And then meanwhile, it's kind of an odd structure where we have two kind of main point of view characters. So one is Dex, this ex-Navy captain, and then the other is a man by the name of Derek Mason, who's this young corporate climber. He wants to rise to this top of this really powerful interstellar corporation. But as he's climbing through the ranks, he starts to discover more things about this corporation, some kind of sinister things, some dark things, and he's kind of confronted with this choice. Is he willing to sell his soul for his ambition and for wealth and riches and those kinds of things?
Yeah, you mentioned the two sides there, the two main characters or the primary characters. Mm-hmm. I found it interesting that in these two stories, you have a very much a science fiction angle on things, and I'm reminded of like a Blade Runner type of world, or, you know, that kind of futuristic setting. But then you also have a very spiritual angle. There's kind of a spiritual warfare kind of thing that's going on behind the scenes. It's not like this present darkness where it's like, here's the angels that nobody else can see, and you get to see them all battle. But there's definitely two different feels to it. I mean, you have that hard sci-fi feel and also the space opera kind of thing going on, but then you also have that spiritual element that's very much a part of the world. Was it difficult to kind of merge those two things together?
I mean, not as difficult as I thought it was going to be at first, because that was actually born of just an idea that the choices that Derek, the corporate climber, has to make. We realized early on, I hope almost instinctively, that in order for him to really go through a spiritual battle, because we wanted it to be a spiritual battle and not just a simple story to tell, and to realize that he was going through this temptation, this spiritual battle, we wanted there to be a little bit higher stakes than maybe just his corporate career and the reality that he was living in, the life he was living. And so we had a scene very early on where things frankly get a little bit creepy. And yeah, I remember
it gets weird.
Yeah, it gets weird. And it's so cliche to have an author say, well, I was really surprised by that. But as we wrote it, we were actually a little surprised by just how creepy it got. And that's when we said, you know, we kind of like this. This opens up a whole nother element to this universe that we're frankly looking forward to exploring in future books.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would also say that we wanted to make sure that any spiritual elements were tied either to something tangible or physical or something that came out of the characters of the story. For instance, we have these darker spiritual elements in Derek's storyline, but these are tied to these artifacts from other worlds, and so there's that sci-fi component to the spirituality. Likewise, there are events in the book that some people could label as miracles, but we didn't want miracles to occur just out of nowhere, deus ex machina, or deus ex, as you
deus
say.
Deus ex deus.
Right, yeah. So we wanted, you know, any miraculous events to develop out of, you know, perhaps coincidences that the reader could piece together and say, oh, this was perhaps God directing all these events rather than miracles just occurring seemingly out of nowhere.
Yeah, I found that when you're writing nonfiction about a miracle, that it's fine. Go ahead, because it's real. But as soon as you start doing it in fiction and you write like an actual miracle that just kind of happens, it's not as acceptable because you're the writer just saying it happened, you know.
And yeah, completely agree. Just like anything else, you have to earn miracles, just like you have to earn any character development or anything else.
I can't tell you how many times Aaron said, no, we've got to earn this.
Well, the other one thing I wrote down actually as I was writing it, just so I wouldn't forget, but then I didn't need to because it just kept occurring over and over again, is I kept finding characters' choices had weight, and there were definitely serious consequences to these serious choices. And I'm thinking of some of the choices that Dex had to make when he's trying to decide how he's going to actually, you know, command his pilots, trying to, you know, decide, well, do I let them open fire or not? And do I let them do this or not? And does he take part in a mission that has some shady undercurrents that could compromise his morality? There's choices all over the place, but there's just a very, very heavy weight behind it. That I was, when he was trying to decide if he's going to take this mission or not, I'm thinking he can't, because if he does, it could be the end of everything. And sure enough, I mean, it set things into place. But one of the things I also saw you guys do is kind of taking a page from the George R. R. Martin school of thought, which is just to let everything horrible happen to people. And even when they're making a right choice or when they have a success, this is something that I really liked about the book, is when they would have a success and they succeed, they're still, it's almost like they took a step backward because of the consequences their successes had. And that's something I really appreciated about this book, is that it didn't just give you that kind of happy-go-lucky, we're all Christians and we're out fighting bad guys. And
I'll tell you, that means a lot to us to hear that, because we thank you for that, because that's exactly what we were going for. We wanted the book to have weight. We didn't want it just to be a happy-go-lucky space opera. We've learned from books that and movies and everything that we enjoy that, you know, things have gone about as far as they can go when things have gotten as bad as they can possibly get. And that's what we were trying to live by.
Yeah, I would say too, you mentioned choices. You know, I would say one of the themes we were going for in our book is how absolute are your beliefs and your convictions. In other words, when will you waver on things that in, you know, the silence and quietness of meditation in your room or whatever, when you think, okay, yeah, I'll never do this or I'll never do that, what's going to bring you to the point where you would perhaps waver in those convictions?
So when you're writing this book, and actually now that it's done, I believe you're working on a sequel, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So as you're working on the sequel now, what is it that, and maybe there is nothing that specifically answers this question, but what is it that you are hoping readers take away with them? You're not just writing a science fiction book that's going to be cool and fun, but you're writing a Christian science fiction book that's going to have a deeper meaning. So what is it that you're hoping readers take away with them?
One of the most gratifying reviews that we received on Amazon, I believe it was a young lady, but she had said that what she appreciated about the novel was that the Christian characters, even though they're set in the pretty distant future and it's all sci-fi, and this person wasn't even necessarily a sci-fi fan, but she said she appreciated the fact that the struggles that the Christians in the book were going through, and yes, they do struggle and they're imperfect. She said that she appreciated that the struggles they were going through were struggles that she goes through in her own life. And I think that's probably one of the primary things we wanted to do, because first and foremost, we wanted to tell a story that was entertaining. But then along with that, if there were lessons to be picked up and maybe thoughts to grasp and grapple with for the reader, we wanted them to be about real issues that real Christians could face here in the 21st century, maybe in the not too distant future, or even in a far-flung space opera.
I would also add to that, I don't think it's a book necessarily intended only for Christian readers either. We've had several people ask us or tell us basically that they have recommended the book to non-Christian friends as a way of maybe provoking thought or challenging them in this or that area. And so like my dad said, we wanted to tell an entertaining story, a visceral story, but I think we'd also be happy if after someone has finished the book, if they are left with, you know, questioning a couple things for the days and weeks following that. Hopefully they're, you know, they're wrestling with some things, whether they're Christian or not. If we get them thinking a little bit about their own choices, their own beliefs, I think we've accomplished what we set out to do.
Yeah, it is not an overtly evangelical book, although we do reserve that opportunity, as Aaron tells me all the time, as we've earned it. You know, further books in, there may be salvation arcs for characters, but that's something that we really feel strongly we have to earn. What we didn't want to do is write a really fun science fiction book, and then in the last four pages, all of a sudden God shows up. That's what we wanted to avoid.
What I found when I was reading the book was I was surprised. And this is nothing against you because I don't know you at all. But you know, when you're recommended a self-published book, especially when it's recommended to you by the actual author of the book, which is how I found out about it, was you contacted me through Facebook. Although I'd heard about it once before on the Sci-Fi Christian, when I think Matt was talking about being contacted by you guys, and or you had sent some feedback in or something like that. And, you know, I'll try anything. And I'm looking for science fiction, Christian science fiction that's good to kind of – I'm getting tired of all the naysayers who are just, there's no good Christian science fiction. There's no good Christian books out there. There's all terrible Amish stuff. And I'm just – you know, I'm tired of hearing that. I know that there's a lot of stuff out there that's not good. But that's just true in general. You know, there's just a lot of stuff. But I'm looking for the good stuff. And so, you know, when you asked me if I'd be interested in reading this, I'm like, yeah, sure. I'd love to, because I want to find something. But I wasn't sure what to expect. And even reading the back, I wasn't sure what to expect. And when I started reading it, it's a thoughtful book. It's an exciting book. There's a lot of the space opera, space battles, dogfighting and stuff like that happening. There's missions and that. But then there's also the kind of hard sci-fi where you've got the Mason character. Is that his name? Mason?
Derek Mason.
Derek,
yes.
Mason. You have that character who it's all corporate espionage kind of thing going on. Corporate espionage kind of stuff that's happening. And it reminded me of some like old Asimov and Heinlein type books that I'd read. And it's just an enjoyable and surprising to me read. Which is why I was really glad that you guys wanted to come on and talk about this. But like I said, it's self-published, and I'd like to talk with you a little bit about self-publishing. The stigma behind self-publishing is kind of going away, and I think kind of has to go away, just because that's the way the world is turning now. We're kind of moving toward where anyone can publish, and so you can have guys like you who have just a really solid novel on their hands, but you can have, you know, someone who's, you know, going to put out something just to slap it out and you know, make money or something like that. I don't know. But for however much money you can make, you know, with self-publishing. But what would you say, because I know a number of our listeners are readers, but I also know a number of our listeners are writers. And what kind of advice do you have from your experience in self-publishing and getting this book ready and getting this book finished, and maybe some things you didn't know before that you wish you had known, or maybe things you did know and that you would pass on and say, definitely do this. This is something we were ready for and glad we were.
Well, first of all, this is Aaron, the son talking, the English major. I would say this is very practical advice, but if you know from the outset that you're going to self-publish your book, and you know, most do it through Amazon's CreateSpace service, find out the formatting guidelines and everything they lay out from the beginning, because it's a bear to have to reformat your manuscript after the fact. I let my dad do all that.
Yeah, that was my job, was the sleepless nights reformatting. So Aaron's absolutely right. That's one thing about self-publishing that we learned after the fact, is format your chapters, your novel, your manuscript right from the start. If it's going to be on Kindle, format it according to good Kindle formatting, and then you can convert it over to something that'll look good on CreateSpace on the paperback. And I'm sure many podcasts have talked already about the Amazon/CreateSpace model, so we won't spend a lot of time on that. But I would say that that is actually the vehicle that is kind of driving all this. I mentioned at the very beginning that it was like 8-10 years ago there wasn't a whole lot of Christian sci-fi out there. There is a lot of it out there now, and the amazing thing is this: all these Facebook groups and these great podcasts, this one, Strangers and Aliens, and that other one we won't mention, at least not until Matt finishes reading the book. I think Ben's going to finish it before he does, but that's beside the point.
The gauntlet has been thrown.
It has been thrown. We like you guys. But where was I going with this is that this is most of these groups and podcasts and everything have come up in the last couple of years. And I think part of that is just because it could be a God thing. I think that we're actually building a market here that has always existed, but there's been no vehicle for it because, frankly, the big five, you know, they can't take a chance on something that they're not going to sell. And, you know, say, hey, I've got a novel. It's Christian and it's sci-fi. Okay, let's see. Somebody who grew up and couldn't get dates in high school. And then, I mean, it's a very narrow, narrow demographic from the publisher's point of view. We reject that. We don't think it's very narrow. And I think all these great writers and authors that are out there know that it's not narrow either. Well, what's changed is that Amazon and Kindle and CreateSpace have made it possible to write and to be self-published. So the advice is always have an editor. Because that can be brutal reading something that isn't edited properly. I'm thankful that my son is a bit of an editor, and then I throw my stuff towards his stuff as well. So we're lucky in the sense that we can kind of edit each other. I'm not saying that's the best model. It's just what seems to be working for us. And then just take full advantage of everything Amazon, for example, has to offer. If we had to do it all over again, we did release it on Nook because we have 4 or 5 friends that have Nooks. But then right after that, we pretty much went to just an exclusively Amazon model because of the ability that you have to run free promotional giveaways and things like that. Those free promos, we're in a position right now where it's not really about selling books. We just want to see more people reading it.
Okay. I was waiting to see if Aaron was going to add anything. So.
Yes, I paused. That's one of those commas we were talking about.
That was more of an ellipses, I think, than a comma.
And Aaron does not like those.
No.
I use those way too much. But part of that comes from comic books. Comic books use ellipses and M dashes all over the place because you can only have so much space in a balloon. And so you continue a thought in the next balloon over, you know, and so, but I use them all over the place. I found now, like, I'll leave a note for my son, you know, and, Timmy, did you take out the garbage ... or recycling? You know,
I always thought that was good writing, but my co-author straightened me out.
So, well, what do you think about this? You use the phrase this springing up sci-fi Christian fantasy community. What do you think about this? There's some interesting books. Have you read anything that you would maybe recommend? That's kind of coming. You know, kind of this new wave of Christian sci-fi. Or I'm kind of putting you on the spot. So if you don't have an answer, I'll just cut this out. But is there anything you've read other than Flight of the Angels that you'd recommend?
Well, you know, I'm starting to pick up on stuff like Brady Harden's. He did the Duncan Ross books.
Mm-hmm.
And
they just interviewed him on that other podcast.
Yeah, they did. And that's how I heard about it. So we downloaded that. What I've been doing is waiting till everybody's book cycles through the free promo. And so now my Kindle is really, really filling up. And so I've been reading some good stuff. There's a gentleman out there by the name of Tony Breeden. He wrote one called Johnny Came Home. And I actually put up a review on that because I really enjoyed the book. It wasn't written in the style that Aaron and I write in, but I really appreciated his knack for telling a story. And so that was a fun book that we read. I've got a list of just authors that all are just kind of all hanging around the internet right now. And there's a lot of good ones out there.
Yeah, but we're cheapskates, so we'll wait till they're free.
Yeah, we're waiting for the free cycle, and we expect people to do that with our books as well.
You did have it go through a free cycle, didn't you?
Yes, we did.
Now, that's something you do through Amazon as a special promotion, is that correct?
Exactly. When you sign up for Kindle Select, you are, first of all, anyone who's an Amazon Prime member can borrow it for free, which is kind of neat. But then besides that, 5 days out of every 90, they allow you to put it up on Amazon, on the Kindle version, not the paperback, but the Kindle version, mm-hmm. you can put up on Amazon for free. And I mean, if you get the word out properly through the social media cycles, many, many, many people have an opportunity then to download the book. And again, at this stage in the game, it's all more about having people read the book than it is necessarily selling a bunch.
Well, before we move on to the year of C.S. Lewis, because I'm going to ask you about that. But
oh, yeah.
Why don't you go ahead and we'll have show notes on our blog at strangersandaliens.com, but let us know where they can get a hold of your book and maybe even, you know, follow you or get a hold of you.
Okay, first of all, the book is available, as we've said too many times probably, but it's on Amazon.com, and the easiest way to find it is just simply search Flight of the Angels, and if it comes up as by Alan and Aaron Rainey, R-E-I-N-I, you know you're in the right place. Or if it has a nice, pretty purple cover with a nebula on it and kind of a knife on the cover, well, then you know you've got Flight of the Angels as well. So that's available on Amazon. You can pick up the Kindle or the paperback, and then... of course, the source of all truth and knowledge when it comes to Flight of the Angels is our website, flightoftheangels.com. And from there, you can get almost anywhere. And then, of course, we would just humbly say, please like us on Facebook.
Okay. So, as we wrap up our conversation here, this is the year of C.S. Lewis. And I think it's appropriate, especially having guys on like you who are doing these kind of things now. But, you know, C.S. Lewis kind of... He paved the way. I don't think that anyone would deny that he and J.R.R. Tolkien are basically two of the big stepping stones toward legitimate sci-fi and fantasy from a Christian perspective, and not just the kind of evangelical, you know, we're going to make everything completely allegorical, you know. So I wrote this down in the outline. You've thought about it, and if you don't have one, let me know, because I want to know why, too. But what are your favorite book or books by C.S. Lewis?
Yeah, I'll go first. I for whatever reason, really like the Screwtape Letters. I shouldn't say for whatever reason. There are reasons. One of those reasons I like when you get theology and thought-provoking material from kind of a different point of view than just straight up, you know, essay style writing. I like the satirical structure of it. And so just, I've always been drawn to that one. You know, Wormwood and, you know, Calvin and Hobbes, you know, the Wormwood being his teacher. So I like the, you know, the little pop culture references. I would say of the Narnia books, I've always been drawn to Don Treader. I'm reading the Narnia books to my kids right now, and we're about halfway through The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which is, of course, a great introduction to the world. What I remember really enjoying about Don Treader, though, is just, just the journey element of it. And thinking about it recently, I realized there's not even any real villain. The White Witch isn't in it. There's no one they're really ever battling against throughout the whole book. And it's more, you know, I guess it's a little more introspective. It's a little more of a journey. I don't know. I like the more leisurely quality of that book.
And I'm a big fan of, first of all, simply Mere Christianity, because very early in my Christian walk, I mean, very foundational, not only to my theology, but my whole outlook on even evangelism and everything, a lot of real practical. C.S. Lewis was obviously the thinking man's Christian, and that appealed to me greatly when I was young in the faith. So Mere Christianity, of course, I love the Screwtape Letters. You even see little influences of that in Flight of the Angels. I'd agree with Aaron on Don Treader, but I also love The Silver Chair because I just love the character of Puddleglum.
And yes.
It's just a favorite. And then I couldn't let this pass without saying that I have a great appreciation for The Last Battle. The way the character arcs, even in the Pevensey kids, come together in the last battle, I just think is awesome storytelling. As a matter of fact, I would go so far as to say, if we are so blessed as to have 7 books in the Flight of the Angels series, there are certain arcs that we will not shamelessly lift, but will be influenced by in Flight of the Angels, that we will be influenced by the last battle. I just think it's a great culmination to a great series.
Yeah, I've always loved that one. When I first read it, when I was very young, you know, like 5th grade or something like that, I didn't realize what I was getting into. And I'm just reading it, I'm like, no, this is horrible.
Yeah.
Everyone's dying, and there's Aslan is gone, and there's a donkey with a dead lion skin on him.
And the ape kind of.
This is morbid.
Good stuff.
Yeah. So you just real quickly, then, can you let us know kind of what the future has in store for you? You're planning on continuing to collaborate on Flight of the Angels, or at least that universe, rather.
Definitely, definitely. With the next book out, and we're actively working on it right now, which involves like even setting up a spreadsheet that says, if I write this many words a day and Aaron writes this many words a day, we'll make the goal that I have in mind that he's not so sure about. But we'd like to see Hornet's Nest come out in a reasonable amount of time, because the readers that we have had get back to us have said we acknowledge that there is a real ending to Flight of the Angels, but it also leaves a lot of questions unanswered. And one of the most gratifying things is that people actually want to see answers to those questions. And so we take the commitment to finish up Hornet's Nest and then continue on very seriously. So yes, we would like to continue writing a series. If we got to 7 books, we'd be very, very happy about that. We've got arcs that could go that far, but right now we're concentrating on the second book.
Yeah, I think that probably the reaction I had when I got to the end of the book is the only negative reaction I had reading the book, because it was just done. I'm like, yeah. No, this is good. I want to continue in this world. It's a great universe. I enjoyed the universe that you built there, and it feels lived in, and it feels natural. It's, I guess, similar to like Battlestar Galactica and Star Trek and that kind of thing, where it just feels grounded in reality, with a lot of weird, crazy stuff going on, like spaceships flying into battle and everything. So
we appreciate that. I mean, there are clear influences. You mentioned several of them. You mentioned Blade Runner earlier in the conversation. I think that aesthetic is a big part of, especially the city and the corporate settings we have. But you also mentioned Battlestar Galactica, Star Trek. I mean, there are all these things that clearly have influenced us. But we definitely have been really deliberate in trying to carve out our own space and try to build something new and unique. I mean, we'd be lying if we said there aren't parts of all these other, you know, pop cultural, you know, stories out there that are in Flight of the Angels, but we really do want to make something new and make it our own.
Yeah, I don't think you can avoid the influences, partially because they're influential because they work. And so for you to just say, oh, well, I'm just going to totally ignore Faster Than Light travel, well, then you have some other problems, you know. I mean, you can't avoid influences. The trick is, you know, to use it and to use it differently, and to use it, you know, in a way that just makes sense. And that's what I feel like you guys have done. I don't feel like it's a pastiche of, you know, Star Trek and Battlestar Galactica and Star Wars, and it's Christian. You know, I don't feel like that at all. So.
That is exactly what we wanted to avoid.
Yeah.
and we're glad that it didn't come off that way.
Well, it didn't for this reader, that's for sure. Well, is there any last word you'd like to add? Anything you'd like to say before we shut down the conversation here?
Hearing your comments, we're just, you know, very grateful that you seem to get the sorts of things out of the book that we're hoping that our readers get out of it. You know, exciting, visceral, but also things to think about, a setting that feels, like you said, alive and lived in and real. Those are all just very gratifying words, and we're very appreciative, and thank you.
Yes, and I would add to that and just say we do appreciate the opportunity to come on the podcast here, and thank you for having us on. It's actually a thrill for two guys from up here in the cold northern Minnesota, and so we do appreciate that.
Well, and I appreciate you coming in and talking with me about this, and the book is called Flight of the Angels. The website is flightoftheangels.com, is that correct?
That is.
Okay, and the Facebook where you can go and like the book is facebook.com/Flight of the Angels. That's also correct. Okay,
yes.
Good. I just wanted to make sure that I didn't get it wrong. So, like I said, I do recommend the book, and definitely like their Facebook page, join some conversation there, and thank you very much again for joining me.
Thank you, Ben.
Yeah, thank you.
And Godspeed, everyone. You've been listening to the Strangers and Aliens podcast, hosted by Ben Avery, Steve MacDonald, and Dr. Jace O'Neill. Our music was composed and mixed by Tim Leffel. Please join in the conversation by visiting our website, strangersandaliens.com, where you will find show notes, articles, reviews, and more. You can also email us directly at podcast@strangersandaliens.com, or like us on Facebook at facebook.com/strangers. Or you can leave us a voicemail on the Strangers and Aliens hotline. Just call 1-804-37-ALIEN and leave your message. And once again, thanks for listening. You know, kind of this person needs to get edited out. there's definitely uh two